If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for another episode of Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. We're really happy to be back here with you again. I can see it in your face, Quentin. You're super excited again.
I am. This is a lot of fun. I really enjoy these conversations. And it's good seeing you in your face again. You know, it looks like you're getting some sun in Costa Rica.
Got a lot of sun yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot awesome. Of sun and a few drinks. It was a friend of mine's birthday, and we did a big cornhole tournament in like just the blazing sun all day long. It was a fun day, but I definitely needed my sleep last night. So
I went to the travel summit last weekend.
I saw
and,
that.
We ended up looking at learning about points. I went with Laura and myself, and we learned all about points and travel and, you know, some travel hacking stuff. It was a lot of fun, and, you know, it was kind of neat. Lots of really good tips in between the sessions with all the, like, the people that were attending. So that I found was really helpful. I mean, one that was really good is like the Marriott Bonvoy has the Amex credit cards where you get a free night stay, and the free night stay could be at any one of their hotel chain. And so, like, you could be, you know, for $130, you get a free night at the end. And so you can have like a personal and a business card, and then and Laura can have a personal and a business card. So that's like four nights, and you can go to only like any hotel. So you could go to the St. Regis in Playa del Carmen, which is like, I don't know, $1,000 a night. Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like, and you're paying $400 to get four nights. You could see how just something like that. And there was like tons of tips like that. So, I really learned a lot because it's not my space, but, there's a few topics on real estate. So that was fun too.
And that was an Amex card for that one?
Yeah, it was called, there's a Canadian card. It's an Amex Marriott Bonvoy card. So yeah, it's quite good. And the other thing too, I was talking to another real estate investor this morning, actually, and he was amazed at how many people are getting, you know, caught up in social media and then investing in different sorts of projects and then getting taken out, right? Just like sometimes social media is portraying people as really successful. And then people are investing
a lot, I think,
in these people, and then they end up, you know, the losing funds, projects failing, all of this sort of stuff, and not knowing that they have, like, looking at their track record, not doing enough due diligence on the people themselves. Uh-huh. I think we should probably do a podcast once on how to do due diligence on, like, potential partners, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that would be a good topic because sometimes people just don't know what questions to ask about people. And
yeah, they don't realize that social media is not necessarily the best way to do your research.
No, but it's an easy way for people to reach out to other people, right?
Right.
So that's always interesting. But, sometimes it's about the connections that you have with people and the length of time that you've known them. And I think I've known our next speaker for a very long time, actually. So I just, you know, lost touch over the years, but this should be quite an interesting podcast for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And there's just a couple things I want to get to first, though.
Yep.
You're on fire all the time, Quentin. You're shot out of a cannon. We need to encourage everybody to go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca, right? There, you know, they can listen to all the episodes that we've ever done. And get in touch with the guests because all of the show notes are there, and that's the way that they can contact everyone that we've had on. So go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca right now. And then after that, you know, don't stop there. Go over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. It helps us get on great guests. And also you can tell us, you know, who you would want to hear on future shows, what kind of topics we should cover. Go over there as well. And that's basically it. I did have one announcement. So I'm super pumped because we have just, we've rebranded a hotel that we've taken over down here in Costa Rica. It's a 10 room, we're going to go with lodge. And we're rebranding it. It's going to be called Manta Ray Lodge and Cafe. So right now, like I said, I'm super pumped because I've never done anything like this before, first of all. And awesome. Secondly, just the whole thing is like right now, it's sort of an autopilot kind of place. They've got lock boxes on the doors. There's no reception area. There's nothing like that. So the goal is to put in a little cafe and turn, there's like a 2-bedroom apartment right in the middle of the building. So that we're planning to turn into the cafe and the lobby with all the tour information and all that stuff. So it's on Facebook. If you want to go over and have a look at it, you can go there. It's Manta Ray Lodge.
Awesome. That's great. You know, Rob, the only way to grow is to get out of your comfort zone and do something different. And, you know, that's really awesome that you're going out and doing that project. I think that's amazing. So congratulations to you on doing that. I would have preferred the name Love Shack, you know, but whatever, you can call it, you know, Manta Ray.
You can call it that. That's wherever Quentin stays. The name travels with him wherever he goes.
Love Shack.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to see how that project goes and, you know, we'll have some fun. So,
it's been a long time coming too. So we've been planning on just how, like having yoga retreats there and surf retreats and all that kind of stuff, like rent the whole space and making it really family friendly, adding some things in there that is going to attract people to go. So I'm really excited to see what happens and how it goes.
Awesome. Good stuff.
So on to our guest, who I'm sorry for making you wait so long, Glenn.
No problem.
Today we have Glenn Young with us to talk about his journey from an IT career and real estate investor to organic farming, something we've never talked about before, and what motivated him to make this shift. So welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. So Glenn's career shift, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, you know, his roots in real estate, comparing farmland to other real estate investments, some of the advantages and challenges of farm investing, the trends in Canadian agriculture and the real estate market. So, you know, better known as Farmer Glenn these days, Glenn is a former IT professional turned full-time farmer at Cold Springs Organics, located just east of Toronto. He's passionate about combating climate change and improving food systems. Glenn shifted his career towards sustainable farming.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, man.
My pleasure.
We're going to learn a lot, I think, today. Definitely a topic that I know absolutely nothing about. So let's start off by just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, and I've known Glenn for quite a while. It's been a long time since we connected. How long has it been since we...
I don't know. I was trying to think. I think we first met in, I would say, 2007 or 2008.
Wow, really?
And I was attending Durham REI meetings at least until like 2014, maybe somewhere around there.
Right.
So yeah, and I've just kind of seen you here and there, maybe at Dion's place or something like that from time to time, but it's been a long time now.
Right. So tell us how you got started in real estate investing.
Yeah, so I guess I'll tell you a little bit about that, and I'll tell you a little bit about how it ties into farming as well. So yeah. I grew up in the country, and I worked on a dairy farm as a kid, and I said I'll never, ever be a farmer because you just work all the time. There's no money, you no days off. So I did the sensible thing. I studied engineering. and got a desk job and worked in IT for a long time. But probably around 2006 or so, I read Don Campbell's Real Estate Investing in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so I convinced my wife that our first house should be a legal duplex, and we bought in Pickering. You know, it was on the Places to Grow Ontario plan and the whole bit. I did all my research. And like I said, somewhere around, shortly after we bought that place, I came across Durham REI and I started attending those meetings. Then 2008, we had, I guess, what they call the Great Recession now, right? So I saw my conservative RRSP portfolio get cut in half. And I said, you know what? You have to work for real estate investments and the gains you get with it. But it's not like a black box, like owning a share in a company. And I just didn't trust that after that. So I went full on real estate investor, you know, while I was working in IT. So we did a legal duplex conversion. We did buy, fix, and refinance. My wife is a chiropractor. We bought a mixed residential commercial unit on the bottom of Liverpool Road in Pickering there. So learned about incorporating and buying a commercial property in an incorporation. And then I wanted cash flow, so I shifted to student rentals. So I really went big on the student rentals. It's funny, I remember as I was preparing for this, I was thinking about conversations with you, Quentin, at the beginning, and how you were just that much more or less risk adverse than me. So I remember debating with you on whether or not it was a good time to buy properties in Pickering and whether you could cash flow. And I just remember all my numbers, like for maintenance and stuff, were twice what your numbers were. So I just wasn't as comfortable going all in with those. So anyways, I got into student rentals. I did both sides of joint ventures. I bought two homes on Kijiji in a week. So I really tried to go fast with that and built up a reasonable real estate portfolio, not like what sounds like you guys got. But along the way, we had kids, my wife and I, and each one of your kids changes you a little bit. And the third one, I had two boys and a girl. My daughter was born in 2016. And I really started thinking about how we were treating the earth and, you know, what the future held for our kids. And, you know, no matter what measure I looked at, wasn't really comfortable with the long-term tendencies for the planet. And I just thought about having a conversation with my kid or grandkid one day. And they say to me, well, you know, what did you do to try and save the birds? And so I started doing a lot of research and I realized that the best thing that I could do was farming carbon. And I started doing projects around the house, got into permaculture, things like that, and realized I needed to do it on a bigger scale. So I started looking for a farm. And as I learned more and more, I realized what a better place the world would be if we had one small farm for every 100 families. You know, farmers, they put all their money back into the local economy, provide local jobs. We're building community, you know, connecting with people around food and around the farm. We'd have a much healthier population because people are getting local food and eating with the seasons and not having all those food miles, and food sovereignty would be improved. And we'd also have a healthier planet because when we grow on, you know, small scale agriculture, we are trying to improve the soil over time. So, you know, it's much more sustainable. And so I have a friend who's really passionate about this mission as well. And so he decided to invest with me in a silent partner. And we started Cold Springs Organics in 2020.
It sounds so reasonable and it sounds like such a great plan. I'm wondering, like, because, you know, I do not have much faith in our government whatsoever. And I feel that almost, you know, they have the exact opposite of what you just described would be what they would think is in the best interest of their plan. I'm not going to go too deep into that, but let's just, my point is there government incentive at all for this kind of stuff?
I mean, there are some. There's not a lot. For example, when you purchase a farm, you are incented to use that farm for farming. So if a real estate investor purchased a farm and let the fields go fallow and didn't produce any food on the land and didn't produce any timber from the managed forests, then they wouldn't get the municipal tax break of the property taxes. So you can get up to 75% off of your property taxes if you can demonstrate that you're actually farming the land. So they don't want farms to go fallow. So that gives you an example. There's other small ones that I've been able to take advantage of. You know, there's the summer student hire, which I think almost all small business in Canada can take advantage of and hire a student over the course of the summer and get up to 50% of their salary back, assuming they're an active student and what have you. There's a couple of ones that are meaningful from a conservation perspective. Like if I delay haying on my land, in order to allow the endangered birds, like the birds, like the bobolinks and what have you, to nest in the fields and produce their offspring, and before we go in and take all the hay off, then I can get $50 an acre, which is as much as my neighbor would pay me for the hay in the first place. So, those kinds of things are really good. You know, some of the things that they've had in solar investment and stuff like that were taken advantage of because, you know, when you have a farm, you usually have 2, 3, 4. My neighbor has $750 a month in hydro bills. And so by deploying a solar system, you know, you could take that down to $40 a month. I mean, it's probably a 12-year return on investment. But once you get that back, then that's really meaningful. So there's some things. I certainly feel there could be more things. I think government could do things like allow us to use the property for more agritourism, like letting overnight stays take place on farms would be a big help for me personally. And, you know, just encouraging organic farming and helping us out from that perspective. I mean, the biggest problem with farming is trying to find a market for your food. That's the biggest challenge. You're competing with, you know, big agriculture, and you're competing with Costco and Walmart. So it is really difficult to find customers.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what CSA is?
Yeah, so CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. So Community Supported Agriculture was started based on a movement kind of independently, but at the same time in Europe and in Japan, where, you know, things like DDT were increasingly being used in vegetable production and what have you. And so they wanted to go back to being able to get fresh vegetables from the soil of a local farmer that they could trust. So they pooled together and decided, we're going to build community around our farms, and we're going to buy a share of the farm's produce for the course of the season. So you, for example, when you buy our CSA, you get either a weekly or biweekly bin of fresh vegetables. There's about 8 to 12 fruits or vegetables, you know, like a bunch of carrots would be one of the 8 to 12, that are delivered over an 18-week season from mid-June to mid-October. You're eating with the seasons, but, you know, most of the stuff you get in your bin that afternoon was harvested and washed that morning. So you have things that were growing in the ground in the morning, and they're on your dinner plate in the afternoon. Wow. So really it benefits the customer because they would never get access to such fresh food otherwise. And they also get the guarantee, you know, like through COVID, a lot of farms like mine did really well because customers saw how fast toilet paper disappeared. And they're like, well, what if that was food? So they go to a farm and they say, okay, I'm going to join their CSA, and then I'll have guarantee that I'm going to have food from this farm over the course of the season. And then the farmer gets the guarantee that they know every bunch of carrots that they harvest has got a home. Like, these are Quentin's carrots, these are Rob's carrots, you know? So I'm not wasting food by harvesting, going to farmer's market. It's a rainy day, nobody shows up. And now, you know, I usually donate it to the food bank, but it'd be nice to know that I'm getting revenue for all the hard work that goes into, you know, growing a bunch of carrots. We also have a holistic nutritionist. She does unboxing videos. She shows people what's in the box, how to properly store things, what to eat first, what will last longer in the fridge, gives you all sorts of recipe suggestions. So we're really constantly trying to improve people's skills in the kitchen, their abilities to cook with real food, and give them really interesting ways of cooking the food so that they're making the most use of the what's in the bin, and they get all the health benefits and they could get to see their kids eating foods that they never expected them to eat and stuff like that.
So you had to develop this your own CS ACE program, right?
That's
So
right.
how did your background a lot like how did it play into how you developed your the program?
Yeah, you've done like residential, commercial, and student rental investing, right? So did,
Yes.
you know, was that part of that or?
No, not at all. I mean, I really just started researching on the internet. I mean, I guess if you took it look at my CSA farm compared, there's only a handful of us. Geez, I could name them on one hand, basically, the CSA farmers that are in the Toronto area. And I guess maybe I use a little bit more technology because of my background in IT. So we have a thing called the Veggie Vault where we keep our ebooks. And I really try to give people, we're playing around with the chat bot, the Mushroom Maestro. So when people get their mushrooms started producing, they can ask the Mushroom Maestro, okay, I got, chicken and onions and garlic in the fridge. Like, well, give me some recipe suggestions for what how I can use these mushrooms.
Oh, cool.
So I do kind of some things like that, but I just basically did a lot of research on YouTube in order to learn it. I had to learn the thing with farming is you have to know everything. I had to learn how to grow all these vegetables, deal with pests, irrigation, greenhouse building, construction, equipment maintenance, building a website, starting marketing, email marketing, what's a lead magnet, all these things like a million things at one time. So I've kind of been drinking from the fire hose since I pulled the trigger on buying the farm.
Yeah, it sounds very difficult. So what you're saying though is that there's not anything out there for people that want to do what you're doing. They've got to build it all from scratch themselves.
Yeah, and I
So
guess
it
that's
sounds
part of,
daunting.
yeah, it is daunting. And part of my motivation, like, my buddy asked me the other day, he said, like, could you go back to working in IT or anything now? Because I'm not making any money. I'm spending all the smart decisions I made back when in my early days of knowing Quentin, I'm spending it all on the farm. It's like the joke they asked the farmer when he won the lottery, what he's going to do with the money. He says, well, I'll just keep farming. It'll be gone in no time.
Yeah.
So the
Oh, it's
yeah.
sad
Well,
though, you know?
at least you're
Well,
doing what you love, man.
and
Like
that's what I was gonna
that's the
say
thing.
is
Yeah.
I feel like I can prove this out. I know that there's customers out there. We find them every so often and they just want to sign up for life. I know there's customers that really want to have a relationship with their local farmer and they really want to have the access to the freshest vegetables they can get and they recognize the health benefits of that. So when I can find them, they just want to be customers for life. So I just need to find enough of them that'll support the farm. And then, once I can show that you can farm environmentally and financially sustainably, I want to basically get a lot of other farmers. So, I've got a young person working on the farm right now and she's amazing. And I need to help develop those young farmers so that they can go off and do this. And if I get a healthy enough funnel, then I'm happy to point my funnel to them and then they can replicate what we've been doing. The small farm, it's not that scalable. It's scalable up to maybe, a few hundred families, but it is replicable. You can have a ton of them and all be doing the same thing. And imagine, your food security when you have a whole bunch of small farms. Surrounding Toronto, for example, right? So you're in a much better place for your community engagement and your health. So we could get into all that stuff. There's a lot.
So is that part of your plan then? Like, how does investing in farmland compare to your experiences, your other experiences in real estate investing?
I mean, investing, it's funny. When you invest in farmland, if you have an interest, if you're drawn to investing in farmland, it's going to be your favorite investment by a long shot, right? Like you go out there and you've got the birds are flourishing, and you've got, you can grab a handful of soil and see all the life in the soil and just forest bathing, all these things that you don't get from buying, a duplex in Pickering, for example, right? You also have the historical appreciation, right? Farmland hasn't depreciated in Ontario since 1987, and even through 2008 and stuff like that. So, but there are big challenges. Try and find an expert who actually knows farms. You got a lot of a lot of things to look at with the farm itself versus just the house that you would look at when you're buying residential. You've got like vastly different zoning bylaws by municipality and region. You know, the number of dwellings you're allowed on a land, whether you can have accessory apartments, what industries are allowed to be executed on that farm. And actually, it's important to mention, you know, people could go out to a farm and take a look at a big piece of property and think that's a farm, but you really have to look at the zoning. So what you want is A1 agricultural zoned, because that's got all the benefits, you know, a lot of the industries that are allowed to be done on there. The tax benefits, all of that. If you buy a rural property, you don't get those same advantages. So if it's zoned rural.
So are you looking at it like at a price per square acre or like?
Yeah, I mean, most people in the industry talk about the dollar per acre value so of farmland.
Like, so how would you say that's changed? So like from like the 80s to the 90s to the, you know, like, so was it like $10 and now $20? Yeah. And like, how does that?
Yeah, I think when I was doing a little bit of research for this, I was looking back in the 80s and it was like you could buy farmland for a few hundred dollars an acre. And like, if you were to go southwest of Toronto, or west of Toronto, basically north, south, Niagara region, down there you can get, you know, $25,000, $30,000 an acre now. So it's gone up immensely. And like I said, it hasn't gone down since 1987. And it just has a lot of staying power regardless of what's happening.
Is there a reduction in the amount of good farmable land? Like, because what often happens, I think, is just like, you know, single family homes in Ontario right now, like they're not building very many of them. So
yeah,
in the end, we'll have less supply. Therefore, there's, you know, the demand will push up the price in the future because of that. With farmland, do we lose a lot of farmland? And does that help to increase that price? Because like from 100 or a couple hundred to 25,000 per acre,
yeah,
that's huge, right?
Huge. So, yeah, and we're definitely losing it. You know, if you take a drive out up 35-115 just east of Toronto, and you see all those farms being just built with houses right now, like there's a ton of development. So we're definitely losing a lot of the farms. And, you know, the part of the trend is, I looked at this in the U.S. there, I don't know, a few months ago, it was like in the U.S. around World War II, it was something like 50% of people would say that they worked on the farm or in agriculture. And now it's like less than 1%. So, you know, the number of landowners who are farmers has gone down drastically. So you got like big farms that have thousands of acres, and then you just have a lot less people involved in farming. So you have places that used to be farms that are now, you know, a single family home and, you know, are not really used for agriculture anymore.
So like I've met similar people like you, Glenn. Like there was another gentleman that I met who had like lots of success in real estate, and, you know, he quit his job and he joined the army because that's what he wanted to do. He joined the Canadian Army. He trains other soldiers. Like that's his passion, right? And it sounds like, you know, you've grown something and you've made it your passion. But I mean, how do we encourage other people to be able to do it? It has to be sustainable and maybe not like super profitable, but like you're working hard, you should be able to make a profit at this, so that you encourage young people to be able to do it both sustainably but also profitably, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm basically trying to figure out. Like, you know, the biggest problem with small farming is sales and marketing. So I'm spending a ton of effort on that, you know, from SEO, making sure that I show up when people try to Google small farms near me and things like that. And then also, you know, making it easier for people to understand how to buy from us, right? So when they go into our website, making sure that we're offering what they're looking for. and are able to provide it to them. That's why we do delivery. We have a refrigerated trailer. So we're trying to, we've got an excellent product. You open up our box, you see this rainbow of colors. It's just, and then you eat it and you're like, wow, that is what a mushroom is supposed to taste like. Like, I never knew that. Grocery store mushrooms are, you know, totally uninteresting after you've had a real mushroom. So, you know, we've got a great product, and in my heart, I believe that people feel that it's worth, you know, the extra effort to cook real food, the inconvenience of eating with the seasons. I think that people can get over that, you know, they don't always have to have, you know, tomatoes in April or whatever it is. And also they'll recognize all the health benefits that go along with it. So I think that the market's going to be there. And then the next question is going to be profitability. So we're doing a lot to get to basically doing like time and motion studies. How long does it take us to harvest carrots and wash carrots and pack carrots, and basically trying to get our labor down per unit so that we can be profitable for each one of these crops. And that, you know, once I figure it all out, then I'm just going to basically try to copy and paste it for lots of young people and just go full speed.
You know, just like any business, like real estate and you know, farming, you know, it's, you know, your KPIs and what's working and what's not. And if you don't know what your key performance indicators are in your business, then you have to identify what those are. And then once you identify them, then you can focus on them and then make them profitable. Right. So that's
exactly.
This is totally like totally different than what I like expected, like, you know, very, very different. And I've never heard of the CSA veggie box before. And, you know, like, you know, what do people get in this veggie box? Like, is it like, you know, how do you go through it? And like, I mean, and I guess one other question I have for me personally is like, you know, we were talking about this morning when, you know, we always sit down for coffee together, my wife and I, we were talking about how expensive it was at the grocery store. My son's come back from university you know, he eats like crazy, right? Like, he's, you know, he's 19 years old, and it's like, you know, all of a sudden he's eating more. So like, we found that groceries from the grocery store have gotten really expensive. Is there like, you know, is this more expensive, less expensive, different? Like, how does that play in with the veggie box? And, you know, how does this subscription service work?
Okay, so lots of questions there that I'll try to answer. So the first question is, what do you get in the bin? And the easiest thing would be if this was actually being watched on video by people for me to show you an example of our bin. So if you want to turn on screen sharing, I'm happy to share. I got a picture here handy. But basically what you get is you get like a bunch of beets. Like, we do golden beets, we do candy cane beets, which, you know, if you've never dealt with a farmer before, you might not even know what candy cane beets are. You cut them in half and you see these red and white stripes. It's like a candy cane, and they're sweet. You chop them into little cubes, you toss them with olive oil, salt, and pepper, you put them in the air fryer, and your kids will go crazy for these, and you won't believe that your kids are eating beets. Like, this is the kind of vegetable that we're dealing with here. So yeah, we can add pictures to the podcast or whatever you like. But you know, even if people go on to our Instagram at Cold Springs Organics, they'll be able to see.
Yeah, that'll be the best way for them.
Yeah. They'll be able to see everything there. So like, we do, for example, a salsa kit. You know, we've got a little kit with our Sakura cherry tomatoes, which are like candy, garlic, red onions, cilantro, a jalapeno pepper, which will do circles around a grocery store jalapeno for kick and flavor. And, you know, you show people how to make a salsa from scratch, and people are like, oh my gosh, this is what salsa is supposed to taste like, right? Like, Rob, you're in Costa Rica right now. You get much closer to the real salsa experience than what people get when they're in the grocery store, right?
We've got some good peppers here.
Yeah. You know, I noticed actually when I was in Mexico that a month or two ago, that the produce that we got was very different. Like, the apples were smaller, but they were tastier. Yep.
Yes.
There was like the tomatoes weren't like gigantic, but they were very flavorful. And yeah. And I was asking, like, well, why is this the way it is? And they're like, well, this was from the farm down the road. Like, yeah. you know, that was the difference. I was like, really? Like,
yeah.
And like, this is what we're getting in this city. We're getting local produce. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is different.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not bringing it in. Like, it's crazy that it's cheaper to bring it, you know, and it's all about, of course, it's all about what's cheaper and, yeah. and that kind of thing, like to bring it in from who knows where, like bring it in on a big cargo plane and sell it in our grocery stores. Cause that's cheaper than, you know, getting it here or there, yeah. you know?
Yeah. So that's like crazy. Tomatoes is a great example, Quentin, like, you know, the tomatoes that we get in the grocery store here have been bred for transport. They're bred to be orange when they're sitting on the grocery shelf, and they're bred for transport robustness, right? Whereas if you put one of my Cherokee purple tomatoes on a truck and try and drive it down to California, it's gonna be a soup by the time it gets there. But if you know. If you eat right. it, if you know, you I deliver it to you, I've just picked it off the vine and you eat it that day, your mind's gonna be blown. Like, this is what it, and it's got the purple stripes on it. It's like you won't believe it, right? So that's the big difference.
Hey man, you're making me hungry. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry. So the next part of your question was the next part of your question was about price. So, you know, I know Quentin for sure. Since we first met, you have definitely changed your diet substantially, and you're yes. eating a lot of healthy yeah. foods. So yeah. you know, it costs more to eat healthy foods, right? You go to the yeah. grocery store when you fix your diet up. Now yeah. you're not spending your time in the aisles picking that ultra processed.
Yep.
food, and you're going around the outside and picking the healthy stuff.
Yep.
And you know, that's healthy, but my stuff will do circles around that stuff. So, you know, you're getting that really nutrient dense food, and you can go to Costco and get more calories per dollar than me, but you can't get nutrients per dollar like for me. So, you know, I definitely can beat them in nutrients. So if you would try and go organic and you just want to buy at Costco, I'm not going to be able to beat them. They're getting their organic lettuce from Taylor Farms, which has 120,000 acres of lettuce, you know, with a whole bunch of, workers that are underpaid there. And, you know, you can imagine, so they're doing it all monoculture. And I'm doing it from, you know, a 100-foot bed that's in between my tomatoes and my cucumbers. And it's all labor for me because we're certified organic. So we're not spraying anything. So killing bugs is by hand. And so,
what?
Yeah, yeah. You potato beetles, you just go out and you crush them with your fingers. That's organic. You can't spray anything. You just basically got to go and kill them.
that's crazy.
Yeah.
I never even heard it. I had no idea that was a part of being organic.
Yeah, definitely. Organic is much more labor. Non-organic is much more fuel. I mean, right. you know, things like organic, conventional fertilizer are produced from, you know, fossil fuels, basically. Pesticides, herbicides, all these synthetic things that you're spraying onto your food are synthetic, and we have to make up for it with labor and, you know, fancy techniques.
What about, like, is there like natural fertilizer? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Poop? Yeah. Oh yeah. That for us, that's what we use. We use certified manure. Organic. And so right. I can't just use any chicken manure. I have to use certified organic chicken manure because I have to know that it came from a place that, you know, it's not getting a whole bunch of antibiotics into the chicken poop, for example.
You know, I love it that we're talking poop, man. This is good.
You brought it up, but it is farming. So
that's what you get with Quentin, the love shack and poop.
So,
hey, but not both together. That's the important part, because then right. we get into some really weird stuff.
So,
I would think that the people that are interested in, like, I'm certainly interested in that, and I would understand that is going to cost me a little bit more in order to get the first of all, like you said, the nutrients that come in that, but also just like that same day, you know, eating something that you said came out of the ground that morning.
Yeah.
And so I would assume that I'm going to pay more. a little bit more anyways for it. Cause I know, like you were saying, the grocery stores are out of control, the regular grocery stores. So probably the gap is closing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that frustrates me about the grocery stores is obviously since I started this, I know a lot of farmers and no farmers are making more money because the price of groceries have gone up. It's the grocery stores are making more profit than ever. Like, so when people ask me, I say, you know, it's profiteering. Like, I mean, I think that the grocery stores have taken advantage ever since COVID of increasing their prices. And, you know, the farmer's not making any more money as a result of it. So,
Well, what is it? Okay, I gotta ask because I'm interested here. I live in Whitby. You're not far from me. I want to order your box. What does it cost me, and what do I get?
Okay, so if you're just starting, right, and it depends on how much vegetables you eat. Like,
but we don't eat beets. I've never like so. I don't know how to cook a beet.
Right.
Like, I don't even. My wife is the maestro in the kitchen. I'm and the mushroom maestro and every other maestro. I'm the cleanup maestro.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that you're dividing up the work and leaving the experts to their field, their domain.
Exactly. So. So
I think, are you asking if you can click a box and say absolutely no beets in my box?
Yeah, because I don't know how to cook it. I've never eaten it before. And unless you educate me on how to do it in a way that's, you know, that I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, I order beet salad when I go out to a restaurant, but I never really make it myself because I don't know how to make it.
Yeah, if you go to a fancy enough restaurant, then when you get a beet salad, you'll get like candy cane beets and you have these little shavings of red and white things. And you're like, that's the kind of beets that we grow. The difference is when you get them in your fridge from us, they'll have been harvested that morning. Whereas in the restaurant, you know, how long does it take to get from the farm to the terminal to the restaurant? So ours are going to be fresher. But to give you an idea, if you go on, what I would recommend is a biweekly bin because you're just getting started. It might be overwhelming to get a bin every single week, sometimes with stuff that you're not used to. You know, like there's a lot of the conventional ones in there, like our Napoli carrots, you know, our cucumbers, Katrina cucumbers, so on and so forth. But there's going to be ones in there that you might never have seen before, like a kohlrabi. Right. So
what's a kohlrabi?
Kohlrabi is a vegetable that's super popular for Germans. So Coburg Farmers Market must have a bunch of Germans because we get asked for it all the time. It's like a purple head. It's got these leaves coming out, almost like a broccoli kind of looking leaf that comes out of it. But the head of it is like you peel it. It looks a little bit like an alien, but you peel it and you just cut it into strips and you eat it. Fresh. It's like this crispy something between like a carrot. It's got a crunch like a carrot, but it's a little bit more watery, like juicier than a carrot. And it's
none
got a more
is,
subtle carrot. Really
none
nice.
Of your stuff is psychedelic, is it?
No. We do mushrooms, but they're like blue oysters and lion's mane and golden oysters and stuff. So
you could really charge more if it was.
Yes. Yes.
Well,
I mean, it doesn't seem
just
like
the way you're describing it. It's like it's got this like ridiculous purple head on it. It looks like an alien. And...
yes. So to answer your question, Quentin, if you get the early bird pricing, then you're paying maybe like $45 a week to $50 a week. And then I do charge for delivery. So if you want me to bring it to your house, I charge $10 a house because my people are all over the place and it takes me 20 minutes on average to get to each person's house. So,
you know, well, that makes sense.
So I also have free pickup. My pickup site in Durham is at basically 401 and White's Road. So if you wanted to do free pickup.
In Pickering,
yeah. Or you can do it at the farm, or you can do it at Coburg Farmers Market. Those are my three pickup sites right now.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and so we do videos to show you how to cook this stuff. So, for example, this
tell us about your workshops. How do you what do you do?
Well, so just so you know, like when you get a kohlrabi, you know what to do. Like we've got videos that show you how to prepare the kohlrabi. We show you how to properly store lettuce in the fridge. We give you all sorts of recipe suggestions from our emails to our videos. So we're basically, plus we have a free ebook for every one of our vegetables. So that shows you what, you know, what can you freeze? People don't know, for example, that you can freeze garlic. They don't know that you can take green onions and you chop them from tip to tail. You throw them in a Ziploc bag. And now it's almost like a frozen bag of blueberries. They don't stick together. You just drizzle them out into whatever dish you're making, stir fry. I mean, I don't know, Rob, if you cook, but I know Quentin's only the cleanup guy, so this might not mean anything to him. But for those cooks in your audience, you can just throw it in. It gives a dash of freshness to anything. You keep it in your freezer all winter long if you want. And in the middle of winter, you can have like fresh Ontario, you know, burst of flavor in your dish, your vegetable omelet in the morning with these frozen green onions, for example. And we do purple green onions as well. Like, so we do things that you've never seen before.
Purple green onion?
Yeah, you just picture a green onion, but instead of the white part on the end, it's purple.
Is that like a different flavor because it's purple?
It, slightly different flavor, but a much different, I guess, flavor for your eyes, right? So you see the purple in your dish, and you know, holistic nutritionists and everybody's always saying get more color into your diet, and that there's all these benefits of eating purple vegetables, and there's a good example of where you can get purple vegetables.
So
they're big sellers at farmers market. People love those.
Wow.
So do you think, I'm just trying to tie this in a little bit more with real estate too, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, and I noticed that you were saying that, you know, once you've got it all figured out, you can go ahead and duplicate it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So is your plan to help other people do the same thing if that's what they're interested in doing?
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of bouncing around a little bit on the questions, but my thought was that, you know, just like my buddy and I are doing, I think that there is an opportunity in the future. I would love this for people who have deep pockets and are really interested in owning farmland to do like a joint venture with a young farmer, just the way you do a joint venture with a real estate expert, right? So the young farmer's going to go out. Pardon?
That's cool. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the young farmer go out, find the property, do all the due diligence, everything. And the real estate investor is providing the capital and qualifying for the mortgage and everything. And then, you know, you've got another property that's going to turn into a regenerative farm that's, you know, improving the health of the planet at the same time as improving the health of the community. And, you know, the person who's got the money, they're, I guarantee you, if they have an interest in this, they're never going to have a more favorite investment than the farm, and a place they can go visit and, you know, forest bathe, like I said, and whatnot. So I think that I would love to see that future. I would just love that. So that's kind of my idea.
Well, it sounds to me like you're very close to being to the point where you could duplicate it again.
I'm getting there. I'm making rapid progress. We're just going into our fourth season of growing, but we've done a lot in the time that we started. But I still, yeah, I need more customers. I mean, I hope people that listen to this say, hey, I want to try a CSA. You don't have a lot to lose. I mean, you're basically, it's a wash in terms of the price. We have lots of our customers that say, you know, I save money because before I was buying all these vegetables from the grocery store and then things would go bad and whatnot. But our stuff, we harvest it that morning. We usually, like, for example, the greens, right? Greens don't last a long time with the shelf life, but we harvest it in the morning when it's cold in the fields. We cold dunk it in ice cold water. We put it straight in the refrigerated trailer. It never gets hot. And then it goes right to your house. It's still cool when it gets to your house in the bin, like the bin is still cool. So once you put it in the fridge, it'll last for 2 weeks in the fridge. So our stuff lasts way longer than the grocery store stuff. So the people say that they're saving money because they were eating vegetables before and now they don't have to buy vegetables the whole entire season because they're getting them delivered to them. So, you know, there's definitely advantages, and I hope that some people decide to take a chance on it. And like I said, there's the insurance aspect. Now you're getting your food from a local farmer, and that means that local farmers will be around for your kids, right? So if you want farms to be around, you got to support them. So that's when I see the struggling young farmers all around me. There's only a handful of us. I wish there was more, But that's what I wish for them. You know, we don't compete with one another. I support local farmers. I would happily send you to any of the local farmers around me. I'm competing with Costco, right? I want people to steer out of Costco and come to the farm.
Yeah, that's neat. So
that's fair enough. And I also don't think that, sorry, I don't consider that competition either, yeah. Right? Like, you're doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Like you said, you're not stepping on anyone that's doing the same thing around you to make yourself more successful. You don't need to do that. So I really like that way of thinking. Sorry, Quentin.
No, I was just thinking that, like, can people partner with you on a project if they were interested in farming, or you're just trying to encourage younger people to do that?
I mean, I can see that in the future. For the moment, I have my hands full, so I'm not ready for that. But I can definitely see that in the future. I wish there was a bunch of more people that would have the experience that I'm going through here, in order to replicate this faster. I can definitely see that in the future for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's good though. Like, the thing about partnership is you want somebody to be the working partner who's doing all the work, right? I could see that. And do you have like a separate like forest bathing thing? And by the way, I don't want to see Rob forest bathing at all. So that's kind of, I just want to share that. Like, that's.
Yeah,
I don't even know what to say.
I mean, forest bathing can be just taking a hike in the woods. So let's keep it.
It's a PG show, Quentin.
Yeah, that's right. So we do events on the farm. We've tried a bunch of different things. And the challenge, like, for example, we've had successful events with a yoga event where you come and you do yoga and you go out into the gardens and you harvest your dinner and you basically eat a fresh salad that you've just harvested yourself. That was great. And it worked cool. Because two of the people I had working on the farm that year were right into it. And they wanted to run it end to end, right? So you need the person that meshes with the event that you want to have. I've done on-farm events like hosting parties. We do an anniversary party every year where a chef comes, harvests from the field, prepares delicious food like right there on the spot, and people get tours of the farm and get to enjoy the barbecue. So that's been a big hit.
Yeah,
And this year,
into season to do that kind of stuff too, right?
Oh yeah, and I mean, my farm's 105 acres. It's got 35 acres of pristine Ganaraska conservation area forest. It's got a spring-fed creek going through it. It's just got the rolling Northumberland Hills, so it's a gorgeous site. Huge barn that's really special to be inside of. So it's great for those types of events, and I think. The problem is every time I have one of those events, you know, maybe I break even on them just because we haven't got the word out enough, you know, about what we're all about and stuff like that. And that's part of this conversation, you know, trying to get more people to be aware of us. Mm-hmm. What I'm thinking about doing this year, I've got a few friends that do Coburg Farmers Market, and one is Isaac from Taller Pizza. We could have him set up his pizzas. We go out to the gardens, harvest things to put on the pizzas, and then we teach everyone how to make pizza dough the authentic Italian way and make wood oven pizzas right on the spot. So that's the kind of event I can see us doing this year.
That sounds amazing.
I mean, you can't go too many places and find an experience like that.
Are you allowed to have a restaurant on site?
Yeah.
Or is some, that just a special event thing?
Some places you can. I've gone through the process of building a commercial kitchen, so now we've got certified commercial kitchen, which is a whole learning experience. But my site is just a bit remote. I often think of restaurant owners as being sort of somewhat in kinship with farmers because it's probably mm-hmm. just as difficult a business to start from scratch, you know, like a restaurant business versus a farm business. I think both we have our challenges of trying to find our customers, and then we have low profit margins, and we're dealing with food. And
how long does it take to get there from Oshawa?
Like 35 minutes, something like that. It's not that far.
So I maybe we could do like a networking event or something there during the summer, because we do our like a networking event. So that would be like in July or August, and and then they could try the different types of like foods, and then if anybody's interested, they could pick up the boxes. Like
That
you
sounds
know,
good. That would be
yeah,
awesome.
I'm happy to do something like that. We'll
Yeah, that
bring
would
we'll
be
do
great.
a
All right,
networking
we'll
event,
stay in
and
touch and announce it when it
yeah,
comes
that'd
up.
be
That
cool.
sounds good. Another thing too is that, like, if you think of the wineries in Niagara, like, they're not all right on the beaten path. Sometimes you got to go, down like a ways down to get to one, right? Just from what I've seen around here in Costa Rica, where, somebody built a restaurant in the middle of nowhere or a hotel in the middle of nowhere. And it's like the field of dreams thing. If you build it, they will come. So I would
Yeah.
encourage you to do something like that. And it's going to be different. So they'll come. I think the people will come to
Yeah.
it.
One of the things I made a little document that I can share with you guys afterwards. It was Glenn's top six tips for investing in farmland,
Okay.
and it's probably helpful for people just to read it and learn a bit from it. But the one thing that I cautioned against is farm fever. So when you buy a farm, you want to do everything. If you've seen an episode of Clarkson's Farm there on Prime, Jeremy Clarkson starts farming and he's like, okay, I'm not going to mow that grass. I'm going to go get 100 sheep and the sheep are going to take care of it for me and it's going to be no problem at all. And in the end, it would have been a lot easier for him to just go out and mow the grass because the sheep bring a whole host of problems that you don't anticipate. So it's, I'm in my first season, I limited myself to just the market garden and just 10 crops because I knew I had so much infrastructure to build. And then the second season, I was doing 102 varieties of different vegetables and, chickens and whatnot. And so I'm trying as much as possible to kind of keep the reins in and just do a little bit at a time and do what works. But you're probably right. In the longer term, it would probably be a really good venture to get into bringing more people to the farm. And then there's the insurance aspect too. Like when I've looked into it, it's not trivial. That'd be another area where government could help is, I don't know, some people don't like that, but for small farms, I think it's worth the investment. But helping us get organized so that we could have our own insurance, because trying to get it through third parties is quite expensive. As soon as you start bringing people to the farm, the insurance rates go through the roof.
There, if somebody's interested in branching off in their insurance business that way.
Yeah, insurance in general has gone up quite a bit. Like we've
Yeah.
had, 20, 25% increases this year on our portfolio. And I understand what I'm being told, which is that the costs of, replacing those assets are much higher, but I don't know. Sometimes when you have such a close, like there's, I mean, we have it's supposed to be a competitive market, but at the same time, it doesn't seem as competitive as I'd like to see it. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm sure it's probably similar with you. Like, you have a, you shop around your policies, but then the policies keep increasing too.
Yeah, and there's only so many places you can go when you've got a real farm. That's the
Right.
problem, is that you got
Right.
really limited options.
Right.
They just don't want to cover you for, bringing a neighbor's horse on the site and allowing people to go for a horseback ride, just walking around the field and things like that. Stuff that would really give a kick to the kids and stuff. It's just, people have sued for it and that's ruined everything.
So much red tape in
Yeah.
Ontario.
Yeah, it's interesting when you travel to other countries and you see, that people do this and you ask like them, how can you do this? Because we can't do this back home. And it's like it doesn't have the same sort of culture of suing people.
Right. That's
Right?
the problem. That's the
I
problem.
mean, there's 30 people. I see 30 people in the back of a truck going to work every morning.
Right.
Five people on one motorcycle,
Yeah.
that kind of thing, and nobody's wearing helmets. And it's just like, well, how do they get away with that? It's like, how else are they going to get to work, right? They got to get there somehow. So
Yeah.
that's how they do it. It's interesting though. And I and I and just like anytime I've got to go back and get something done in Ontario, it's so frustrating, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, I think it would be the same thing across Canada or even in the US. I think probably the insurance is the challenge.
I just mean, like for it would make a lot of sense for government to have huge incentives for you to do what you're doing. To me, that would make sense, right? It would encourage more people to do it, which seems like something that we all need. So, you know, it's just it's one of those things that I wish we could see turn around a little bit.
Yeah.
I have seen more of what you're doing.
Yeah. I have an interesting story that I think you guys will find interesting. So we're involved in this project this year where I've got this philanthropist that's interested in buying food from the farm for a project going on in downtown Toronto. So there's the University Health Network, which is like 8 hospitals in downtown Toronto. And they have the Gattuso Social Medicine Center. And so their idea is that, you know, providing healthcare is more than just emergency room visits, right? Mm-hmm. So you're just being reactive if you're just giving people overnight stays in emergency and treating whatever their ailment is at that time. So they're looking at providing housing, providing healthy, nutrient dense food, the mental health supports, things like that. And so they identified something like 254 people that resulted in 12,000 emergency room visits in 1 year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you can imagine how much an emergency room visit costs, right? For an overnight stay. And so what they said was, they had a parking lot in one corner of their property. They built these prefab homes, which are very cool. I got to see them. And they're making something like 400 square foot units with a little kitchenette. And they're going to put some of these people that really need housing into these units and give them the mental health supports and basically put them on a path to, you know, getting some semblance of a reasonable life. So with the philanthropist providing funding for me to bring basically food down there and set up almost like a farmer's market for them to take what they want back to their kitchenette. And then there's a community kitchen that's run by United Way and in the building, so they can get the rest of the food that the individuals don't buy themselves or take themselves from me. So hopefully we see, you know, improved health outcomes for these individuals, which I think would be awesome because, you know, they're spending so much in healthcare dollars and the emergency rooms are being tied up by people that are living on the streets and have nowhere else to go when they have a problem. And you can imagine that one of these meals is going to be more nutrients than they probably get in months right now. So hopefully that shows that you can spend the healthcare dollars in a better way, i.e.
Preventative,
and give some to the farm and set up these housing and things like that and put people on a path to more success. So going back to the idea of the 1 to 100 farms, I love the concept of sort of projects that make sense like that, a better expenditure of dollars going to be like a portion of a new farmer. So, you know, they don't care which farmer they work with as long as they get food that's fresh and nutrient dense. So they can start with me and then the next farmer that I bring up, they can go to them and say, okay, I'm going to be your base, right? Customer base. And then you can start adding more consumers and more members to your farm on top of this. And once you get to 200 members or whatever it's going to be for you to break even or to make a reasonable living, then we'll move that on to the next one. So I think it's just a cool project to be involved in. And I'm really excited to see how it goes. My hesitancy is I'm going to be delivering to downtown Toronto and I've seen the parking situation down there. So I know it's going to be a nightmare, but it's kind of exciting.
No, that sounds fantastic. And I guess my question is, and I know you may not know the answer, but so this philanthropist, right? Like without him, none of this would be happening. So is the whole idea to take this program and demonstrate it to somebody? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think that we can demonstrate, you know, they have people like, now his name's eluding me, the former head of McCain Foods. Anyways, so he started an organization for food security, and their goal is by 2030 or something to reduce food insecurity by 50% in Canada. And so they've got, you know, donors with deep pockets that are trying to go and take on projects that will get food to the people that need it the most. So, you know, why couldn't projects like ours be destinations for those types of donations, right? And then once it's proven out, like a business case to say, okay, if you take $1,000 healthcare dollars and you spend you spend it on a project like this, you're saving yourself $10,000 because you're getting less emergency room visits. So maybe it would make sense for government to also match, or, you know, match funding or something like that, right? I have another.
It makes sense. I mean, in a perfect world, it really makes sense.
Yeah. I have another one that I want to share with you. So the University of Kentucky, they did a study. They had 4,600 employees, and they had, it's the US, right? So they had detailed information on their healthcare and pharmaceutical expenses for each one of these 4,600 employees. So what they did was they offered CSA vouchers to the employees, and they studied what the healthcare expenditure was year one after being joining the CSA, and then year two after joining the CSA. And obviously most people like us, our annual healthcare spend is mostly nil if we have no preconceived issues or anything like that. But the people who had healthcare expenses, so they were kind of the high healthcare expense group. In the first year, the $200 investment that they made on the CSA voucher, for the people that joined the CSA, they saved $1,000 in pharmaceutical and healthcare spend. And then in the second year, they saved $1,500. So basically, if a US insurance company that's providing healthcare insurance to employees of, you know, whatever organization decided to give CSA vouchers to the employees, now the employees go and now they're getting a bin of gorgeous vegetables every week, and they're displacing the processed food that they would be eating otherwise. And now their healthcare expense goes down by 10 times the investment. So they spend 200, they save, you know, well over 2000 by doing it. So it's pretty compelling that there's a case to be made for investment on these types of projects, and you get a big return, right? And that's not even considering that it's not just the employee that got the benefit, it's the whole household, right?
Yeah, it's like being proactive versus reactive. I think that's, you know, we've talked about that a lot as a real estate investor. You know, you want to be proactive versus reactive, and understand what the implications would be, and then, you know, try to take advantage of, you know, if this happens, do this. If this happens, do this. So I could see the value of this, and I think you know, if people are thinking about joining a CSA, and you know, they want to support local agriculture and investing, how do they subscribe to your CSA, your veggie box, and learn about these workshops?
Yeah, so basically all they do is go onto my website, coldspringsorganics.com, they click shop, and then they decide, do they want weekly or do they want bi-weekly, do they want pickup or do they want delivery, and then they just participate. You know, they join our online community. We have a private Facebook page, so all of our members share their creations. And the next thing you know, everyone's making, you know, Pam's golden beet soup recipe or whatever it is, right? So then there's the veggie vault. You watch the videos. You just basically roll up your sleeves and you start learning and you start cooking. And then you just watch your family's health transformation, right? Like you see your plates getting much more interesting. Everyone's eating homemade fresh salsa that was harvested that morning. Those types of things, right? Plus you're getting better at the kitchen because you're cooking real food. You're not throwing something from the freezer into the oven at 425 and, you know, those types of things. So
one more thing. Could you tell us the best version of your Clarkson Farm story? You got to have something.
I have so many issues. I think that one of the funniest ones, or funny or not so funny, was last year on the very first day of my deliveries, was the same day that the 401 was shut down due to the tragic fire with that exploded truck there in Whitby. So, you know, that basically created chaos for my delivery route. And so partway through, I decided I couldn't make the pickup. So I had to deliver to everybody's house. So I started driving all over Durham. And then the brake seized on the truck. So then I had to get a U-Haul. And it's got a trailer on the back, by the way. So I limped along to the U-Haul place, took the trailer off, swapped it onto the truck, and then the phone died. And now I couldn't get anyone updates after that. So these are the kinds of things that happen in farming. You know, we've had massive water leak in the barnyard and had to dig up the whole property. We've had, you know, a flooded kitchen, and that's how I ended up with the commercial kitchen. So I'm been trying to be adaptable, but
so yeah, it sounds like if you follow you around with the camera, you'd get a pretty good show. You wouldn't even have to manufacture it. It would.
Oh, 100%. There's so many issues.
Okay, we're going to flood the kitchen today, okay?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's getting better as I go, because if I ever, now I'm listening to my spidey sense where it's like, okay, I could sort of do that temporarily, but if this happens, then I'm going to get a major problem. Usually the major problem happens in farming, so I always listen to that little voice in the back of my head now and do it the right way the first time. If, what is the farmer's expression? If you don't fix it, if you don't find time to fix it right, you're going to find time to fix it twice.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I like that. Okay. Well, thank you, Glenn. This has been awesome. I appreciate you sharing everything with us today. And we're going to have all of the links to Cold Springs Organics, right?
Yep.
In the show notes, so people can go over there and they can definitely reach out and get more involved in this and get some of these, like the participate in these programs.
Either the bi-weekly or the weekly. Yeah.
The bi-weekly or weekly. And if they go onto my website, there's also a free download they can get. It's the A to Z vegetable storage guide. So it shows you how to store every vegetable properly. And you just put in your email address, and that'll also put you on my newsletter. So you'll find out about any events that are happening at the farm and, you know, specials we're having. We're selling mushrooms right now like crazy. We've got the best mushrooms that you've ever eaten in your life. So if you want to get on that list, that's the way to do it.
Yum.
Sounds great. Okay. Well, thank you. And again, we're going to share all that information in the show notes. Quinton, how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, yeah, you can get in touch with me by going to quintondesouza.com or durhamrei.ca. That's probably the best ways to get in touch with me. If you want to see what I'm doing, I'm heading to Nepal and doing the Everest Base Camp next week. So I've got a big hike coming up. So that's going to be fun. You can take a look at it on Instagram, and you can follow me at QmanREI there.
Oh, we're definitely going to have to follow up on that and hear all the stories about this trip.
Yeah, it'll be fun. How about you, Rob? How do people find out about you?
Oh, you can just email me, rob@mrbreakthrough.ca.
Awesome.
It's the best way. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Awesome.